For February 15th, 2013, we talk about the rumored new Arkham game, Space Team, and how to make time for games. Welcome to the 12th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
David Minesmith.
Ben Merkel.
And welcome to The Level, a podcast for people who love, I repeat, love, video games. And it is a mostly unremarkable night. I don't have any kind of clever intro for this or anything like that, so why don't we just jump right in?
Sounds good.
No foreplay. Go.
Yeah, no entertainment tonight.
All this talk of love and no foreplay.
It's a harsh love. So we have a segment called The Brief, where we talk about things that happen in a brief manner. That is the news section of the show. If you're out there listening to other podcasts and you need these conventions, these norms to keep you comfort, to make you feel safe, right? What am I listening to? I don't understand. But we're here to comfort you and to assure you that everything is okay. No, it's not, but everything is okay. Don't worry. All right.
I don't understand what I'm listening to most of the time while I'm making this show, so I can't really begrudge our listeners that.
Yeah, I was going to say good luck to the audience. Yeah.
Good luck to everybody. Oh, good luck to us all. So does anybody have anything earth-shattering that they want to bring forward and talk about?
Because no.
Mine's kind of minor.
I've actually got a fairly interesting one.
Do it.
Do you see illustrious leader Kim Jong-un recently released a fan video for Modern Warfare 3 using one of its cutscenes?
What?
In the video, a man is dreaming of a spaceship launching from Korea and orbiting the Earth before the camera pans down to show New York City being destroyed by missiles. Apparently, the juxtaposition of with the scene of the missiles coming from a cutscene in Modern Warfare 3. Apparently, the juxtaposition of spaceship and rocket-borne Holocaust is meant to convey the message that North Korea's space program is strictly meant for peaceful purposes. But, I mean, let's be fair. That makes a lot more sense than the plots that Modern Warfare cutscenes usually convey.
You gotta dig deep with them.
I can robot a...
Go ahead and robot it. I'll put it in the show notes. But we can't listen to it live right now.
Huh. Yeah. I think one of my favorite things of this though was that the original video got taken down when Activision or whoever did a Millennium copyright whatever.
Yeah, DMCA. Yeah.
Right. So the moral of the story is, even if you're a brutal, bloodthirsty dictator, you still answer to big media.
they rule it all. Man.
I was actually wondering this morning, like, what's left to sanction on North Korea? They've got to have gotten everything, but apparently video games have not been sanctioned yet.
I think that they have. Like, I don't think that they're allowed to do anything.
Yeah, I don't think they can.
Certainly not eat.
Well,
it's kind of amazing that copyright law is better than UN.
Man.
Yeah. The production values for it are about at the PBS level. Like, that's more or less what it looks like.
Well, I mean, it's funny because, like, all of their media has to come from them. And the North Korean regime is a subject of minor fascination for me, but like, you know, Kim Jong Il, when he was alive, he was a huge film buff, and he would actually like get people that, like, basically kidnap film directors and bring them in and, you know, have them shoot movies that he wrote or directed, you know, something like that. Just kind of like, I want to make this movie, and then taking them as state hostages. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, they just, like, if that sensibility just kind of pervades everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's also, you know, human rights tragedy, et cetera, et cetera.
It's weird as hell.
It's crazy.
Well, I feel like basically what you can sum down is that when you can jump straight from the wonders and dreams represented by space to firebombing a city without missing a beat, that's a good indicator that you might be the bad guy.
Okay, so if I was in their position, it was kind of like, okay, we're going to be leaving Earth soon. Like, of course I'm just going to, like, glass the entire planet. Like, later, fuckers!
Nukem from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
I'm not coming back, you know? Like,
It's the planetary version of dropping a mic.
Oh, boy. I've always wanted to do that, but I'm just too sensitive to the fragility of audio equipment.
Note to self, name a nuclear bomb mic.
Drop the mic. Well, title suggestion. So
planetary mic drop.
This just reminds me of, like, you know, like all these times that, you know, video game controversies have intersected with global politics, things like that. So I remember when the PlayStation 2 came out, there was a bunch of controversy over the fact that, like, this thing is like a supercomputer, and there were all these rumors that Saddam was buying up all the shipments, like when they were really scarce at the start, so he could like put them together into a cluster so that they could run missile calculations or something like that,
and have kick-ass land parties.
See, the thing is, Tony Hawk 3, you say dog. That. But, like, Pakistan's nuclear weapons program, that's more or less how they did it, is buying up a whole bunch of just random technology that individually was mostly harmless. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you take this part from this and this part from this.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, like... It's just so absurd that it was like, man, these PlayStation 2s are really, really hard to get a hold of. Maybe it's Saddam.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was also, oh gosh.
That's why he was so violent playing them video games.
He must have been playing Grand Theft Auto.
Full circle, my friends. Full circle. Huh. No, and there was also when Fallout 3 was first, you know, coming out, I believe that concept art of like a ruined post-apocalyptic Capitol building was used in Al-Qaeda media briefs, you know, like that kind of thing. Oh, okay. Like, this is what we're going to do. You know, this is allegedly. I'm trying to find an article about it, but I can't. I assure you, I'm not full of shit in this regard. But
I do remember the one where the Taliban released a ransom video with like a captured U.S. soldier until a toy company called up and was like, "Yeah, that's our action figure in the video."
Nice.
They were banking on our love of robot chicken.
Well, you've got to admit, though, if that had been like MacGyver, that totally would have worked.
Well, all you have to do is just, you know, just like make the focus all crazy, right?
Right.
You know, if they fake the moon landing that way, 1/16th scale people, they had to shrink them down.
The man landed on the moon. We landed on Venus.
That's actually the way they did the Lord of the Rings Hobbits. It was a perspective trick. Elijah Wood was an action figure the entire time, which is why that performance was so bad.
Oh man, Korea. Next story.
I've got one that actually is probably more relevant to the rest of you than to me.
Okay.
I think all of you have played the second game in this series, and I have not yet gotten to it. But there is a new Batman Arkham game coming this year.
Be still Ben's heart.
So apparently this was in like a businessy investor relations call or whatever, and the CFO was talking about how they have such a strong lineup next year, and he said that it's it's going to include the release of the next Batman Arkham game. So he confirmed that that's going to be in 2013, which is kind of cool because I don't think people kind of knew there was another Batman game coming, but the rumors were that it was going to be something different and that it was going to be in 2014. So this is kind of a surprise and a good one.
Huh.
To make another surprise, that's a bad one. Apparently Rocksteady's not developing it.
Oh no.
That's surprising, but
the article that I'm reading says that Rocksteady had hinted that its next game will not be Batman based. But I don't know if that just means that they're working multiple games in succession, or you know, again, it's hinting. I don't know if that's for sure yet.
I just googled a story and it said that a third party was confirmed to make it.
Boo!
I know. Because there was even foreshadowing for a third game in the second game, and so you would think that they wouldn't drop the ball like that and do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the big question is, will it be Arkham Suburb, Arkham State?
They made a joke of this in the second game.
Yeah, they did. What was the joke? Arkham Planet or Arkham World? Something like that?
Yeah, the guards were talking about how the bad guys don't know when to stop and that they'll keep making bigger and bigger things. It was cute.
Yeah.
Self-reference.
It'll be weird, like, you know, because like the Joker is definitely, very definitely not coming back because Mark Hamill said not never again.
Just like Sean Connery.
That's all I'm gonna say. But so like, you know, what are they gonna do? I mean, Batman obviously not hurting for villains or potential arch rivals, but man, the those two games both just hinged on Mark Hamill as the Joker, you know?
I'm going to say that I mean, what I'm worried about is the fact that Rocksteady's not doing it because they had such a love for the series that they weren't just emulating the series. They were innovating upon it and putting their own touch to it. But it was a good frame of reference that they had. I think any other game company that's going to come in, I think it's just going to be an emulation of what the first two games were. But I don't think they're going to. That's just my initial prediction.
It could be an opportunity to get some new ideas into it, though, right? Like, even if it is a refinement of like the stuff that really worked in the first two, you know, like that's still more of good stuff.
Hey, it could be a Treyarch situation where they're perfectly competent. Yeah.
I was going to say it could be a Treyarch situation in that they have no new ideas of their own, but they're just going to carbon copy the last game. But
hey, that's the definition of competence, right?
Carbon copy. Perhaps. I don't know. But.
Oh, man, I hope so. Otherwise, I'm in trouble. but yeah, that's I don't know. I'm not as worried as you are, Ben. But also, I don't hold the series as near and dear as you do.
I got a lot of love for Rocksteady. Yeah. So maybe, I mean, the only thing that might be forgivable is if they go and make an Urban Chaos 2, then perhaps that's okay. And who, for the 50 people in the world who played Urban Chaos 1, I hope you appreciated that one. So.
Oh, that is great. I don't know. So we'll see more as that comes out. You know, let's put a tack in that one and return to it as we continue. Mine is super small, so I'm going to ask you, Ben, if you have one or if that was yours.
I have one.
Okay.
Do you want to go or do you want me to go? Do you want to end on a small note or do you want to end medium-sized note?
let's put the small one in here. A couple of episodes I talked about Kentucky Route Zero and how I believe it's is a really worthwhile thing for people to play, and it's a good game, and it's one of those rare things that seems like it was made specifically for me and therefore will be good for everybody. Everybody will enjoy it because my taste is so goddamn good. If you were hesitant about dropping money on something that might be an unknown quantity, the developer of Kentucky Route Zero has actually put out kind of a prequel episode demo kind of thing called Limits and Demonstrations. That takes place before the first act of Kentucky Route Zero, and it's free. So you download it, you get a little bit of a taste of kind of the art style, of the feel, of the ambiance, of the flavor, the music. Oh God, the music is so good. If you buy this game, like just like spring for the whole thing, because you get the soundtrack for each of the episodes. And, you know, I'm big on listening to like ambient instrumental music while I'm working, and this has made its way into the rotation. So good. Yeah, it's free. So you just go to their website, just, you know, do a search for that or look in the show notes and you'll see that there. And, yeah, that's just a more of a heads up, really. I don't know how much, you know, news that is, but, yeah.
Hmm. I think there's a trend there of you see more and more people doing like an episode one or episode zero kind of format.
Yeah.
Where the, I mean, the first taste is free, right?
Who else have you seen doing that?
I was actually just looking on the PlayStation store earlier today, and obviously Walking Dead, I think, does the first episode free. There was some other obscure game, I can't remember it, the title of it, but I was impressed by the number of entries that had kind of a first episode free mentality.
Yeah, I love the episodic kind of stuff, like not the Half-Life episodic thing where nothing comes out for 7 years, but the actual, like, you know, episodic thinking, like, you know, Walking Dead or Strong Bad or anything else that that, you know, Telltale has done to really good effect. Yeah, it's I dig it. It's good.
I just want to think about Half-Life 3 now for a little bit.
I don't know. Like, I wonder, like, who's been waiting for what longer? Have you been waiting for The Last Guardian longer than, like, all of us have been waiting for Half-Life 3?
Well, I mean, I guess Shadow of the Colossus came out about a year and a half after the Half-Life 2.
This is true, yeah. But the last episode of Half-Life 2 came out, two years after Shadow of the Colossus. True.
Yeah, they had taste. You had a little bit of a taste. Yeah,
yeah, just a little bit. So I don't know, man. Valve, you're working on Dota, honestly, for real. You're throwing your hat into that ring. Come on, give Papa what he wants.
At least they have a fully functional company. And
yeah, that's true.
Gabe Newell's still the president of Valve, so. Yeah.
Honestly, they're probably smart enough to realize that nothing they could do at this point would live up to the hype.
Well, they shouldn't have waited so damn long.
Die down. Well, that's the thing. They have to wait for it to die down.
We must wait a generation for all of the gamers to die.
Wait. We've already tried that. It's called Duke Nukem Forever.
Ooh.
But like, oof. It's been... Okay, so I'm trying to make... Okay, so from 2007 to 2013, let's just call that 6 years, it has been as long... since Half-Life, I can't believe we're talking about this. This is so cliched. Everybody's angry about this. It has been as long since the release of Half-Life 2 Episode 2. Like that span of time is the same span of time as was between Half-Life 1 and 2.
Yep.
Ugh.
I know. Exactly. Ugh.
You gotta be patient.
I know you do. I'm gonna get it. I sound angry, but I'm not.
You do.
I'm kind of angry, yeah. But it doesn't mean I'm not gonna play it.
They need to record all the all of Gordon's dialogue, and that takes a while.
That's what it is. They've decided to voice him, and they're looking for that perfect voice actor.
I really hope. I really dislike the whole silent protagonist thing.
It's got to be it's got to be Morgan Freeman if they have someone to cast the voice of Gordon.
Yes.
Well, they call me the chosen one. My Morgan Freeman impression just gets worse and worse every time. Ben,
Tom
what's
Woods,
great, dude?
You could use a crowbar to open doors.
That's all it takes, a crowbar and time.
Oh, man. Ben, what's your story? What's your story, fella?
Yeah, what's my deal? I wanted to talk about the DICE Awards, which were last week in my home turf now in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I found out that they were happening kind of the day of, and I should have known or whatever. I don't know if you need like a ticket to get in or not, but
it's super exclusive. Like that is like okay. Industry inside only.
Okay. Then Good thing I didn't try and show up. But I streamed the award show as I was playing Tokyo Jungle. Hint to what's happening next. But and so I just listened to the awards, and pretty much Journey won half the awards, and then The Walking Dead won about a fourth of the other ones, and then everyone else got like one award each. But yeah, basically Journey won everything. So it was an award show devoted to saying, hey, that's a really good game. So that was interesting.
Can you blame them?
No, it's a really good game. But it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that 2012 was kind of the year of underdogs. You know, it's all these bite-sized games, or, you know, games that you can beat in like 5 hours, maybe. There's no additional content outside of that, you know? So it's kind of interesting that, you know, those were the games of the years. It's kind of a shot across the bow of the AAA games. But I like that.
We're seeing so much of this, and you know, this may just be blue car syndrome or whatever, but I think that all of the AAA developers are like putting their resources into making things that are going to come out for the next generation of systems. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're in those twilight years of this generation where all of the crazy, interesting stuff is coming from smaller people who are like, okay, we have a large enough potential audience. Let's do this. Right. I don't know.
When do you think the next generation of consoles are coming out?
This year, been
announced. Do you think
we'll find out? We'll find out in a week, right? Week and a half.
GDC, maybe.
No, there's that PlayStation event.
The PlayStation, whatever. I keep getting on YouTube.
Oh yeah, yeah. Maybe. Who knows? I don't think that they're like, if they announce their system, it's probably not going to come out this year.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, they can announce their thing, but I think that Microsoft is in a better position to put their thing out this year, Durango or whatever it ends up being, the Xbox Infinity, whatnot.
I think it's weird to think about how, like, when PS2 came out and PlayStation said that they were going to be committed to making 10-year consoles, it seemed like it was, like, way too long, and that they had to, like, back support PS2 for way too long. But now the 10-year thing kind of seems like a cutoff time, because, you know, like with the PS3, you know, it's approaching that in a few years. So
it kind of is. But like when they said, hey, we're going to have a 10-year life cycle, they were talking about the PlayStation 2, and they did it.
Yeah, like, yeah, like they did, just yeah. recently stopped manufacturing PS2s.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, and that puts it at about the right. About the right time frame. So if it comes out next year, they have like 2-3 years of, you know, making PS3 games in order to usher people along, right?
Yeah. But kudos to them for that support.
Yeah. No, for real. They're doing good. So this Dice Awards, I saw it, like every headline I saw was Journey sweeps Dice Awards. I mean, I need to go back and play that again, because I was thinking about it. And like I had like a very powerful recollection of some stuff that happened in it, and I was like, man, there's probably so much more that I just didn't pay attention to or didn't see. And in all these year-end retrospectives, people are talking about it, and it's like, oh man, there was all this stuff I didn't see.
I don't know if it's feasible or not, but I'd recommend trying to get someone to play the game in front of you. One of my friends played it, and I watched him play and beat it, since it's, you know, kind of a short game. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of nice to watch somebody else play it and see their choices, but you also pick up on a lot of details that you might not otherwise notice.
Right.
When I see something like this, though, where, like, you know, Walking Dead or Journey or something, you know, wins all these awards, I almost feel like, you know, kind of like I want to hear, yeah, that's obvious, but other than that, you know, it's like if I ask someone what the greatest president was, it's like, okay, yeah, obviously like Lincoln or Washington, but other than those, of the ones we might be, you know, of the ones where there might be argument, what do you think?
You've got like analyst syndrome, which I'm just in this moment declaring that a thing. We're like, you know, if you watch the like the football announcers on the game day shows, pregame shows, you know, there's always the super obvious game where it's like, yeah, everyone knows that Team X is going to clobber Team Y. But because this person is, you know, a football expert, they feel that they have to have a unique or interesting opinion. And so they'll make stupid picks just because there's like the too obvious choice. That choice is too easy.
Yeah. So I have two ideas. It might be more interesting, instead of them doing like Game of the Year, either A, do it like NCAA bracket style, where you just have like the obvious good game is going to be like seed 1, and then like the game that's questionable is going to be like seed 16 or whatever, mm-hmm. and kind of decide what the best games are that way. Or just simply come up with a list of games and just rank games. Mm-hmm. And so instead of just saying this is the best game, say here's the top 10 games of the year.
Yeah, nobody would be satisfied with that though.
I think that might be more interesting because they'd have to kind of put more thought into it instead of it just being, this is obviously the best game. It's more like, okay, here's a set of the really solid games this year.
No, I agree. I'd rather see that. My only problem with that is like looking at everybody wants, you know, something to put on their box, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it just
phrasing?
Like, what's that?
Nothing.
No. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, we want to have this little badge to put on the front that says DICE, you know, award winning game of the year to update, or more relevantly, like, you know, you look at the product information on the PlayStation store, be like, what one dish, burpeter, and then there you go.
I'll be honest, it's a good thing I don't vote for these, because my vote would be entirely based on which game do I want to see a Game of the Year edition of.
I don't think you have to be Game of the Year in order to win a game of in order to have a Game of the Year edition.
I never understood that.
I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with them. It's just one of those things where I have trouble remembering games that came out last year that weren't those particular ones.
And by the way, if Journey released $50 DLC that did nothing but change the dress from red to green, I would buy it. Like,
because you like the color green so much, or you want to support them?
I would buy it because that game was so good. They deserve any money I can throw at them.
Huh.
You know that if you collect all the secret symbols, you can get an outfit that's white.
I think I did know that. Yeah, but I haven't gone back to do that.
And you get an infinite ribbon. Like it recharges automatically when you are on the ground, so you can jump and fly around a lot. It's fun.
I think we covered this in the previous generation of this show, but I'll bring it up again. Is that I seriously. You know, Journey was a great experience and I wouldn't change a thing, but I really wish there was kind of a parallel challenge mode. Like the whole idea of jump as a limited resource is super interesting to me. And especially like in the ice levels where your jump would just kind of naturally decline over time. I thought that would make for some really, really interesting platforming and puzzling. And they, you know, they never really went there in the main game. That would be cool. I would pay $100 for that one.
I think if the company's goal was to make a puzzle game, they would have more of that. But I think their interest lied elsewhere.
Yeah. No, and that, I guess that's the great thing is like, it knew exactly what it was and it didn't stray an inch from that. But the underlying mechanics were so solid that you could have taken it and made a wholly, you know, different, completely satisfying game.
One thing that was interesting is they had an interview with some of the developers after DICE, and they were talking about how the last thing that they usually choose are the game mechanics. So they kind of get an idea of something they want to do, and they kind of have a story or a feeling that they want to express, and then they spend the largest amount of time just trying to find a game that will properly do that, or like a mechanic that will properly do that. I thought that was interesting.
It's kind of like Pixar, where they're kind of like, okay, what's the best idea that sticks? Okay, a fish that is trying to get to his dad. Okay, now we have to make the most realistic water in the entire world. I can't disagree with that approach. I don't know. Ideally, they would be formed at the first time, or they would be formed at the same time. The concept and the execution, but it's not always the case. And you know, I'm just that kind of guy who the concept will win a lot of the times. I'll put up with a lot of bullshit. Not saying, you know, Journey or any of the other games are a lot of bullshit, but that is not. Yeah.
We're just saying that you still go back and play EverQuest.
Little punch, man. The grind. It is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing. First, I will ask, is there any new business?
I want to talk about what you've been grinding on, Cole.
Oh, you saw me playing?
I saw your update, which I responded to, so you know that I knew that.
Okay.
He doesn't stalk you.
I communicated with them.
Yeah.
I sent him a message. I wasn't stalking.
Like stalking.
If I was stalking him, he wouldn't know it.
Yeah, he wouldn't be texting me saying, interesting choice of slippers there. I
don't know if you do like the scream thing.
What?
Call.
Oh, okay. I was like, what if he screamed at me? That'd be a terrible way to stalk somebody.
Hi, Cole, how are you doing?
Always be screaming.
I like your nightgown.
Kimono's a bold choice, but I think it's okay. No. okay. I'll do mine. I've got a couple. All right. But I'm gonna try and blow through them because not a lot of it is new territory. So first one, the one that Ben is talking about is The Cave, which was a delightful experience. I liked that a lot. So I played through with the adventurer, the scientist, and the knight. And yeah, it's real good. I think that if you are predisposed to like adventure games, you're going to enjoy it more because the platforming is kind of nothing special. But I like the way that it uses level design to tell a story, which is really cool. And kind of the cave, you know, the cave paintings that you find, it's reminiscent kind of like of Psychonauts, where like you find the little like Viewmatic kind of things, where you like look at the little slideshow of stuff, and it just tells the story through a series of pictures, and you unlock these over the course of the game as you find these cave paintings. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just in general, I think it's a huge win. I'm trying to decide if I want to go back in and play the rest of the characters, but
you should. I wanted to fact check this because I know you said that I recommended those, but I was almost positive that I recommended the Time Traveler and the Twins.
Hmm. That's
how dare you deviate.
I've actually got back him up on that.
Ooh, sweet. I'm not crazy.
Because I asked if the Twins were two characters in one.
Yeah. Maybe I took the wrong thing away from what you were saying. I liked all the stories though. I didn't think that any of them was any weaker than the others.
No, yeah, they're all good. Some are just gooder.
Well, it's So I just all those. It's so dark. It's such a dark kind of game. It's like playing an Edward Gorey book. You know.
Yeah, I had been thinking about it the last week since you mentioned that you're playing through it, and it's kind of like the common theme is at what price is your goal worth?
Yeah. And that's most ham-handed in the Explorer story, which I really liked, but just kind of like mm-hmm. the things that it forces you to do. Well, and then there's also the scientist, but let's not get into that. It's real good. You know, just kind of like these characters with no dialogue, you know, really you are just learning everything you can about them by these images and by the, you know, kind of the scenarios and kind of worlds that their desires bring them to. And that you can learn about their flaws just through that kind of limited information. It's a real achievement.
Yeah.
By the way, I think I might need to print a retraction. I remember I brought up an article about this, I think, 3 shows ago or something like that. And I had said that it features time travel mechanics prominently, but that's only for one character, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I was wondering when the time travel would come in, that I didn't pick to play as the time traveler. But
Mubby.
I think what bugs me most, and this is, I don't know how crazy this is. There are 7 characters, but you can only play as 3 at the same time, and you don't get anything for combinations. So I have to play through 2/3 of the same game to get that straggler. like, I might as well just do the monk, the time traveler, and the what's the not hillbilly that I haven't said yet?
The twins.
The twins. I might as well just do those, you know?
In fact, that's what I was going to recommend, because if you do because they have a set order at which they appear, and the hillbillies is in the first set. And so I was going to say, if you want to see his, then you can play a third time and get his out of the way early.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. I'll probably do that. That's nice and short. I like a tight, well-edited experience, and it was entertaining the whole way through. So, yeah, buy it, play it, love it, learn it.
I hear you saying it's dark. Is it very humorous?
Yeah.
At times, yeah.
It's funny. The narration is pretty good, I think. The cave talking to you.
Yeah, it kind of has like a Portal-esque humor to it where it's like – something that makes you laugh, but then after you laugh, you're like, oh, that's kind of bad.
Sort of like the news.
Do the interstitial puzzles change at all? So, like, you know, you move from, you know, each character's area to the next area, but there are these kind of things in between them, specifically thinking of, like, the mine carts and the dynamite and stuff. That's not specific enough to be a thing.
Those are constants.
So you just have to rely on knowing how to do them always.
Yeah. So I think the order for this is there's the knight and the hillbillies. If you're one of them, there's the minecart. There's the time traveler twin.
Let's not say too much about the actual sequence of things. But I'm just curious.
I guess it's like two characters, something, three characters, something, three characters, something.
Right.
And then resolution.
Yeah. So, yeah, to say anything more about, like, particular story beats that I liked would be to ruin some of it. But, yeah, any questions about that before I go on to the next one? I've got some ground to cover, dudes.
Of the three that you played, which one did you like the best?
Wow, that's tough. I think in practice I liked the scientist one the best. Overall, for gameplay and concept, I like the explorer one, and then just for pure concept, I liked the knight. Like just that one was really fun to think about and to go through, and I think the payoff for that one was really entertaining. But some of the gameplay was kind of butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
That's just my opinion, dog. moving on, I've played the first two or three missions of Hitman Absolution.
Hey.
Yeah, I know, right? Mm-hmm. It's next on the backlog, dude. I'm clogging. Yeah. So I like the game a lot, you know, so it's not just that one mission that I played when we were hanging out. I'm terrible at the game. I find myself reloading a lot.
Don't worry about it. That everybody does that.
Yeah. If I felt like I was breaking anything, I would feel worse about it. But just it's trial and error, you know. So,
yes.
I'm kind of fighting against my inborn disability of like not being able to pick characters out from a background. So like I'll be walking along and think I'll be in the clear, but there's just a dude that I couldn't see because he was blending in. And it's like, ah, crap. Okay. But yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. And I think that I'm going to like it for the duration. Yeah. So I'm in the, I like how that's soft. Good. Yes.
Good. Must be done.
I'm about halfway through the Terminus Hotel right now, which I think is like mission three. I'm gonna mention a story beat, but it's the first mission, so it doesn't technically constitute a spoiler, I don't think.
The story is not advanced enough at that point in time. So
yeah, like when you're creeping along outside that building, and there's a guard inside a window who's like talking on his phone. And he's like, "Oh, so you're saying it's not prostate cancer? Oh, I could kiss you. I'm so happy. My daughter's going to be..." And you have no choice but to yank him out of a window and drop him to his death.
Oh, no.
It's like, I love it. I like that. That, you know, that is probably the most darkly humorous thing in the entire world. But, like, dog, for real?
I believe that's on the first mission, yes, at the mansion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can...
Is
you
a target?
No. You can wait and he'll walk away.
Oh, damn
it. But the game generally doesn't force you to kill people who aren't your targets.
Yeah, that's true.
That is another thing too. Is you can get through every mission with only killing your target and not arousing any suspicion.
So I'm a bad
human. What we learned is that deep down, Cole wants to kill.
No, it's not that Cole wants to kill. It's that once Cole gets started, he can't stop.
Can't have just one.
Jesus. Yeah. So I like it a lot. I'm only on mission 3, so I can't say too much. I like the disguise mechanic. I like how I think that its interface for letting you know when you're about to get spotted is nice and unintrusive.
Yes,
it's not as like crazy overbearing as like a Metal Gear Solid radar would be, where you can see exactly what everybody is seeing, but you get just enough warning to break line of sight, you know, before being boned, which is pretty cool. And the way that it handles the context sensitive stuff is pretty neat, where you have to hold the button for a little while, and you know, just the entire like graphical motion graphic presentation is pretty good.
Yeah.
So when you say the disguise system, is it still where you can like find the outfits, and as long as you don't do anything too stupid, people will.
Go ahead.
The way the system works is whatever you're disguised as, people who also have that disguise will recognize you. And so in hindsight, I was kind of a little lukewarm about that system, because if you're like a chef in Chinatown and you go like to the opposite, like no one's going to know that you're not a chef that's in another part of the area. You know what I mean? Like,
Because in the Chinatown, no one will recognize the 7 foot tall white dude.
Yeah.
There are some instances where it makes more sense than others. Like, you know, if you're disguising yourself as a guard, and all of these guards are, you know, dispatched here for a particular mission, it makes sense that they would have a headcount or a buddy system or something like that. But for stuff like the chefs and whatnot. Yeah. But it's a nice order of operations puzzle. Continue, Dennis.
I was going to say, I still want to know that I got to play this shortly when Ben was over and hanging out, and the level that I played was set in a strip club. Can you get the disguise off of one of the strippers, and does it work?
Well, you don't really have to get a disguise off of them. You just have to take off your clothes and find some electrical tape to put over your dude nips.
The animation on his junk is awesome.
Straight up Dr. Manhattan.
The ragdoll effects, yeah. Jeez.
I would like to suggest for a title, Dude Nips.
Duly noted. but so it's good. I intend to play more of it as time goes by, as you do.
I will say that the game is it continually rewards you for playing it. Like, the levels are consistently good throughout, so. Oh.
And that's what I want to see. I want to see more of these different scenarios and things like that. I don't think that would be the kind of person who would go back through and get all the unique kills. But that's just me. I'm on a mission, guys.
Clogging away.
David, what were you going to say?
Oh, have you gone Silent Assassin rating on AM?
No. I just said I was bad at this game, David.
Okay, Grant.
He just vomited up his whiskey and tea as well.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, in the previous game, I, every level, just pulled out the silver ballers and shot anyone that attacked me.
Anyone who looked at you sideways.
So there's probably no difference between the game and the last level for you then.
Yeah, basically... I apparently played it where I was like, this is nice, but could use more Call of Duty.
Dude nips. So I have two more. We've instituted a game night at work, which is neat.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. But the first one that I want to talk about is an iPhone game called Space Team.
Okay.
So this is a local multiplayer game where everybody, up to four people, you download this app. And for each of the sectors, your screen is like a control panel with different kind of widgets and buttons and things like that. You know, dials that can be like, you know, make 5 sandwiches or, you know, attenuate the flux capacitor or things like that. And at the top of your screen, there is an instruction that you have to say to somebody else. So it'd be like, okay, set, release five space chickens or something like that. But everybody else has these instructions, and you know, it's very unlikely that you're going to get an instruction that you can do. And these instructions have to be executed within a certain amount of time. So what happens is everybody has their controls and everybody has their orders, and you have to try and find a way to, in an orderly fashion, instruct whoever has what, and you don't know who has what, to do what it is. So you're waiting your turn patiently to say, okay, do X. And then like, wait, it's not being done. Who has blah? Who has this? And so it starts out very orderly, very, very, very quiet, very, you know, controlled. And ultimately it ends up to, who has the goddamn flux capacitor? We're going to, the ship is going to explode.
Put the rabbit in the box.
and this is compounded by the fact that occasionally meteors will show up and only one person gets the warning for the meteor. So when you get that, you say, meteor, oh crap. And everybody has to shake their phone or else the ship gets hit. So like, this isn't so much a game as it is a team building exercise. It's free. And it's on iOS, so it can be on your iPhone or iPad. And if you find yourself in the rare situation where you have four people in a room with an iPhone, go for it, because it's really, really cool.
It sounds
so it's basically
awesome.
What every game of FTL looks like for the NPCs.
Yes. It sounds like something that would be right up your alley, Dennis.
Yeah, and it actually sounds like a game that... it sounds like a game that I'd read about, but I don't think it's the exact same thing. This game was like basically a Star Trek simulator, down to like the ship looked like the Enterprise.
Yeah, I've heard about that one too. It was a Kickstarter project.
Yeah, something like that, where you have four people with a screen that, you know, is unique to their function, but then there was a fifth person that was like just the captain, and they didn't have any screen, they didn't have any controls. They just had a screen that kind of showed the best view of what's going on at a macro level. And so I'm trying to find the name of it right now.
It's something Artemis? Real generic.
Yeah.
Artemis?
I think that's it.
Yeah. But it's definitely a great use of that technology. Hey, let's take this thing that's kind of ubiquitous and just put something on here, you know, this kind of multi-screen kind of thing. So you look like total nerds playing it, because you're sitting around talking about, you know, just missiles and phasers and things like that. But
that's a huge missed opportunity, because at any given table of, say, 10 people, five or six of those people probably have iPhones.
Yeah.
And I play lots of games, random apps with my friends, but don't have anything that works in real time like that.
Yeah, it's neat. The only complaint that I would have about it is that it's we dropped a couple of games, so it's dependent on either Bluetooth or local Wi-Fi to run, and just sometimes it'll be like, oh, mission ended because somebody's phone went blah blah blah. Yeah, but the upshot of that is, since I've introduced this to the work environment, you'll hear people screaming throughout the office at random times. So it's taken hold in a way that I couldn't have predicted.
You're like, help me, I'm doing all the work all my coworkers do are fly this spaceship. Flash the space chickens.
Space chickens. Yeah.
You have to invert at least something. Reverse the polarity.
Yes. Hit it with a I'd hit that with a tachyon beam. So, and the final one, surprisingly enough, this will make you all gasp. I guess I want to say gasp and gaspitude, Codblop.
Hey, all right.
Call of Duty Black Ops 2, playing split screen, local, kind of stuff, doing some, what is it? Team domination, something like that. What's the control point?
That's domination.
Yeah. And then doing some zombie mode. It's a good time. I was bad at it. I was holding our team back, but it was fun.
Did anybody rage quit on you?
No, no. It wasn't like the time somebody rage quit on me in Portal 2.
I was going to say, it's better than Portal 2.
Yeah. but yeah, it was good. I liked it. You know, I was playing with people who knew what they were doing. So they were they're being very helpful in terms of like, oh, don't use that weapon or oh, et cetera, especially in the zombie mode where stuff is really poorly explained on screen, and having somebody who knows like, okay, go to this place now, you know, somebody who is willing to take control, in a space team like fashion. It helped out. We did a couple of the maps that stick out of my mind. One of it was like a volcanic thing in a bar or something like that. It was a really kind of small map where you couldn't step on the lava, or the floor is lava or something like that. And the other one, we did a level called Die Rise.
It's been a while since I've played The Floor is Lava.
you know, just say it and see who jumps. But yeah, Die Rise was pretty cool. It seemed a little bit more story driven, which was interesting. I also got separated. I fell down an elevator shaft, but somehow survived. So I was about four floors away from my dudes, trying to fend for myself, waiting for them to come get me.
Did you survive or die?
Help!
I died. I was like, I don't know where I am. Where are you at? I don't know. See,
those are always the best parts of those types of games, though. Are those times when you get separate and the game suddenly becomes just epic?
Yeah. So it was fun. It probably helped that I was in a room playing it with people. I don't know if I would get the same enjoyment out of like playing online with other humans, but playing with people that you know and like is neat, especially when they're right next to you. So
yeah. It's a game where you kind of need someone to explain to you what's going on in the zombies mode.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would piece it together otherwise.
I dug it.
Ricky.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So who wants to go next?
I'll go. I have only a small little ditty.
Do it.
I've been playing some Tokyo Jungle. That's about it.
are you entranced?
It's like an arcade game. So, I mean, I'm playing it like an arcade game where it's like, oh, yeah, I'll play around with this. And it's kind of fun. However, I have kind of hit a wall as far as it's going. I think I'm a buffalo is the highest one that I've unlocked. But I figured out a little bit more of the mechanics. Basically, there's missions every 10 years. Excuse me. So you'll start as an animal or whatever, and you can look at the start screen at any time, and there's objectives that are unlocked. And so there's like an objectives for years 1 through year 10. There's objectives for years 2 through 20, 11 through 20, 21 through 30, etc. And so if you do those missions, you get unlockable items. Cole, I believe I sent you a picture
of it. You did?
Yeah. I was meaning to send that to you like last week, but it was like midnight or 1 year time. So I was like, I'll just send that to him later. And so you got it today now. But it was a picture of a baby chick with an antenna spike strapped to his forehead, which increases the attack of the animal. So different items will increase your stats or whatever. Also, there's one mechanic that I don't know if I fully explained last week where if you take over an area, there's like different there's like maybe like four or five different points in each different area. And if you take one over by marking each of the territories, you can then attract a mate, and you can attract a mate based on how leveled up you are. So there's rookie, veteran, and boss. And that dictates what level of mate you can have. There's a lot like of the boss. There's kind of the undertones that I've been picking up is there's like a lot of like Japanese cultural subtext in the game. So the way you attract women is very non-politically correct, I guess. And so the three tiers are there's a normal female, there's the I think pride female or like whatever the best one is. And then there's the desperate female at the one-star rating. And so whichever one you pick, it'll give you more or less offspring. And what else? Yeah. So another thing is you unlock the story mode by picking up items in the survival mode. So there will be different like kind of like PDFs or like files or whatever that kind of dictate what happened and how the apocalypse came or, you know, how things went bad. And so if you pick up enough of them, it'll unlock a story mission and then you can play that. And kind of another example of the cultural environment of the game is one of the missions when you play as a Pomeranian, you try and go out hunting for the first time and get food to bring back for your parents and the rest of your family. And the first one that you bring back, it just shows your parents being very disappointed in you and that you have to do better than that.
Like,
that's funny.
I know that the majority
dishonor.
I know that the majority of video game stories and plots are just excuses, but this takes it to this weird level where they found this metaphor. Like somebody wanted to make a game about animals, and it's like they put it in a time machine and sent it back to the most brutal days of the Inquisition, and they tortured the hell out of it in order to make it fit what they wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. Like let us stretch this animal evolution metaphor as far as we can, like to points where it doesn't make much of any sense.
Have you watched Pokemon?
I'm not saying this is a bad thing because right now that is like that stuff has to be more interesting than the game itself, right, Ben?
What do you mean, like the cultural subtext of the game?
Just the craziness around it. Like, it's not so much like, oh my gosh, I really enjoy what I'm doing right now. It's like, holy crap, look at how crazy this thing I'm doing right now is.
Yeah, I mean, that's where a lot of the enjoyment comes from, is the absurdity of the game. Yeah, quite.
Wow.
So I'm stuck right now trying to take over the hippopotamus territory with the buffalo. It's quite difficult. One of the cool things, though, is like when you get to the upper levels, like when you survive and be like maybe 40 or 50 years, it feels legitimate then. You know, like kind of the absurdity goes away and it'll be something like, okay, I'm a buffalo. Now there's a bunch of like lions and elephants and like big animals around. And like each one is a challenge to take down. So, it feels more like a wildlife simulator after a while, like when it gets to that level of difficulty, which is kind of interesting because early on it's there's so much absurdity, but it's quite fun.
Wow. So
that's all I've been playing. Played a little bit of that. I'm probably close to being done with it, as you know, whether I beat it or not. So
neat. Who wants to go next?
I can go.
Do it.
Yeah, go.
Cool. I've actually completed a couple things since we last talked. So Dark Souls, beat that game.
Oh, cool.
And promptly started a new character. But all I will say is the final boss is incredibly satisfying. Like, it's everything that I wanted that boss fight to be.
Nice. Are you talking thematically or like gameplay? I literally don't want to talk too much about this.
No, I both. Okay. Like just on every level, I kind of sat back after I'd beat it and was like, man, that was perfect. So quality end to a quality game. And I'm going to roll next as a pyromancer / sorcerer.
Oh, cool.
And see what happens.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I also, quote unquote, beat Binding of Isaac for the first time, which is really kind of like, hey, tutorial's over. And the gloves come off.
Oh, so you beat Mom?
Beat Mom for the first time, yeah. Which really all that means is it unlocks the full scope of the dungeons and releases a whole bunch of items and tougher enemies into the world. So the game becomes more interesting to play, if anything else. Yeah. So you know, it felt good about myself for the past 2 weeks. I've completed what I started. Unfortunately, unlike our multiplayer question from a couple weeks ago, it wasn't out of duty. It was out of out of enjoyment. So it's two great games, and we spend a ton of time talking about them. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. If we sum up the time that we have spent talking about Dark Souls on this show, mm-hmm. it probably still exceeds the amount of time that you've spent talking about Dark Souls on your Dark Souls podcast.
Well, we've only done like 4 episodes so far, so
the gap is narrowing, but I think we've gotten ourselves a pretty solid lead.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't help that I just don't stop talking.
So. yeah. And now I don't either. And pretty much once I'm sure Ben will fall for it eventually, and then we can rehash everything again.
it takes time, but you know he shouldn't feel bad if he doesn't like it.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Should really feel bad about it. I'm just trying to think about
it. Sorry. No. I'm just a Catholic priest.
Jeez.
Womp womp.
Womp womp.
What else? Got any new
stuff?
Yeah,
I got some new business. I ducked into Retro City Rampage for a bit.
Oh.
And I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's basically a parody retro video game. Set up to be kind of like an 8-bit GTA that is just packed solid with little references to different games and different pieces of culture. Mm-hmm. So I really only played through the first tutorial, and I had to put it down because it was almost sensory overload. There was nothing functionally wrong with the game, but it's just so densely packed with references. It's like I know, Cole, you've got a young niece, and you know that you've got the siblings or the you know family members that are around the age of 3. And you show up and they just do nothing but bring you every single one of their toys in succession.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hand it to you. It's like, look at this and look at this and look at this. And this is a thing. And that's a thing. And so with Retro City Rampage, it's like Doctor Who reference, Duck Hunt reference, Mario reference, Zelda reference. And they're just all smashed together, you know, Batman reference. And, you know, it's all completely just squashed together. Which is really funny, but at the same time, it's, you have no idea what's going on at any point in the game. Yeah. And you know, you randomly get transported back in time. And then I think to an alternate universe shortly thereafter, and then, you know, get a bazooka and then you're in a tank and then you're fighting the Joker and then you're on a roof. And it just, I was like, I don't know. And you have a score up at the top, and I could not figure out, you got multipliers somehow. There were multipliers in the game. And so I couldn't follow it, but it's a kind of a funny concept for a game. Can't say that I'll necessarily pick it back up, but I think I know what acid feels like now.
Yeah. Everything that I saw about it made it seem like it was unmitigated monkey cheese, you know, like just like random,
that's a good thing or bad thing.
Random humor. No, that's like an internet thing. Like, you know, like you find you, like, okay, so think of that girl who went to like Hot Topic and had the stickers with the bunnies that were saying like, I wish you would die.
Oh yeah.
And like she would talk about Invader Zim all the time, and she'd be like, man, monkeys and potatoes and cheese, monkey cheese, blah, 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 like random humor. It looked a lot like that to me.
Yes.
And
that's,
like,
that's very apt.
I am immediately wary of anybody or any work of art that depends solely on reference to, you mm-hmm. know, remain relevant. So like, you know, these games kind of came out at the same, you know, at roughly the same time, but like, I can't help but compare it to Hotline Miami, which does have references and does, you know, like, you know, tap into a cultural milieu that's bigger than itself. And kind of bigger than its immediate kind of genre, you know, partners. But it, like, everything that I've seen of Retro City Rampage doesn't indicate that that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, at least for the 3% of the game that I played, which is what my save file tells me.
And for the 0% that I've played. so
for
it's
such
tough.
Educated people.
Yeah.
And that's really, I mean, I've been playing a couple miscellaneous mobile games, every time I travel, which, sorry, I was out last week, traveling on a trip, which wound me up in the middle of the Boston blizzard.
Why not?
Yeah, which is an adventure I will not go into here, but, I always get addicted to some new word game. And so I found a game called Ruzzle, which is Ruzzle, Yeah. Which is very fun. And it's a word game. And that, I mean, there's not much else to say. You make words and play against your friends. I enjoy it. It's my name in that game is the same as my Twitter handle, and you can find your Facebook and Twitter friends there. So if you want to match wits, look me up. But it's a good little distraction.
Do you have have you ever played a letterpress?
I don't think so.
That's one of the bigger ones. That's also really, really, really fun, but I won't go into it here.
I've got something for the next time I travel.
Yes, you do. Yeah, friend me on it. It's free, but it puts a limit on the number of simultaneous games you can play. It's $1 to unlock, okay, like all of the, so it's technically free to play freemium kind of thing, but it works really well. Hmm. Yeah. Yippity yip 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 yip.
So that's me.
Cool. David.
Unfortunately, I've been playing almost exclusively Dark Souls, trying to keep up with your other podcast.
Oh, well, yeah.
I killed off the gargoyles, killed off the butterfly, and killed off the lower undead burg goat demon thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just about to go into the depths.
Okay.
I've got to say the gargoyles are infinitely easier when you summon both of the NPCs.
Oh gosh, yeah. Even just the one.
Even just the one. I'm going forward. I'm going to try to do it more solo. But those were that and the butterfly were the two bosses that I had beaten on my previous playthrough. Mm-hmm. So, also I wanted to have the witch as option for the was it the Four Kings battle later on.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those fights are actually fairly easy in that scenario.
Yeah. Well, the NPC is specifically tailored to help you take care of that, right?
Right. Although I do have to say, before summoning the spellcaster for the butterfly fight, I did go through it and just saw how far I can go, and the fight's actually fairly easy, which is surprising.
It telegraphs its attacks pretty glaringly.
Yeah. So I tried and failed to beat Havel.
Okay.
I really, really want his ring because that would allow me to fast roll in medium armor.
Yes, that ring is one of, if not the best ring in the game.
And it's a thing where, you know, I've got my shield's good enough to block one of his attacks, but any hit he gives on me will kill me. So it's a thing where he's not strong enough that I just don't have a chance. But the problem is I would have to land so many hits on him perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, I could probably beat him using dung pies.
Yeah. There are a couple of different ways to cheese him.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst being attacking him through a doorway.
Yeah.
But not wanting to do that. So
yeah.
I'm about to you know, head into the depths, which I just despise that area.
You can get through it real quick if you know what you're doing. So
yeah, I've almost debated just skipping it because I don't think there's anything in it you need other than the Green Titanite is useful if you want to make holy weapons.
Yeah, the Green Titanite's useful. Man, we are getting so deep into stuff here. It's worth going through and just like trying it, I think, because you'll right. probably find that you like it better the second time. But it is skippable if you have the master key. So I hate to do this, but let's cut off the discussion here.
Sweet.
Just because I wanted to find out where you're at and stuff like that. I don't want to cannibalize my own shows.
But gotta save my material, man.
Yeah, but
I did have one question.
Yeah.
I have 10. you know, I'm playing as the Pyromancer, so I've you know, enough intelligence for the most basic sorceries, and I could have you know, build up my faith for the basic miracles. Are either of those useful?
Sorcery is good because it has a longer range, like if you're just trying to pull stuff.
Right.
You also have to consider if it's worth using one of your attunement slots for a soul arrow or whatnot. Right. Like, you know, if for that cost, you know, you would actually be better suited to just like equip a bow in your offhand and use that to draw things. So if sure. if you're going whole hog with pyromancy, you're going to want those attunement slots for other stuff.
Sure.
And if all you're going to, you know, use that for is to bring people in at that level, that's all you could really do. There are more effective ways to do that.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, for the miracles, I was thinking about doing the heal spell enough to get that.
Yeah. That's potentially a thing, but you'll find, you know, you'll find that once you start being able to kindle stuff, it's just not even worth using your attunement on that either. So, yeah, that's the thing. So, is that the grind?
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we hear what you have to say. We ask you a question, or sometimes you ask us questions, and it is just a bloody free-for-all. this time, we gave you a prompt where we asked you, how do you find time to play games? You know, where do games fit in your life? It can be really difficult if you have other obligations, such as jobs or relationships, to find time to sit down and escape into a world where you're a bald hitman or whatnot. And, you know, I think all of us have challenges with that as we go along in this crazy work-a-minute world. And we want to hear your strategies for coping. And I'm just stricken by how everybody else has girlfriends and wives. So I don't know what I don't know what I'm complaining about. But starting out in that vein, I'll get us started out. Jeffrey Lawton, Geodude, Geolaw. Any number of nicknames that he might have. He says, I usually only play games rarely when my wife's either not home when my wife's either not home or at late night when she's in bed and I can't sleep. Yet I consume about 10 hours of video game podcasts per week. I'm just realizing how weird that is. Amen, brother. Like,
very true.
I don't know. The last time I did a calculation of how many podcasts I listened to in a week, it was about 2-3 years ago, and it was like roughly 30 hours, and I can only imagine that's gone up. Yeah, I know.
That was the last time you did the calculation?
Yes.
Was it like never again?
It was too depressing. Yeah. Well, I can't be alone with my thoughts, so silence is not permitted. But yeah, gaming when the wife's asleep. I don't know. I can't comment. I don't know that life.
What say you, Dennis?
Yes.
Do you game when your wife's asleep?
Yeah. It's interesting how the games have changed roles as my life has changed roles, I guess. Because it used to be that I would always kind of, the first thing I'd do whenever I got home from work would be to flip on a game of one sort or another and play for a while to decompress. And that was kind of like the dead space between work and then whatever I had to do that night. And that definitely changed when I got married and had housework and all that stuff. And my first reaction was, yeah, like, man, I really, there's like a 4-hour window from 8 to 12 where, you know, any activity that's looking at a screen really occurs in my life nowadays. But actually that's not necessarily true. Like, at work, a lot of times, you know, I work at a desk and I try to just get up and walk around a little bit at semi-regular intervals. And I'll always, my excuse will be, you know, I'll walk around the floor and I'll just whip out my phone and play a round of Ruzzle or play a round of Rayman Jungle Run or, you know, any whatever game is on my phone that I'm enjoying at that time. So I probably do that, you know, 3-4 times throughout the day just to kind of give myself a little brain break.
Yeah.
So that's where gaming happens. And then also now that I have a computer that can actually play games, it's a lot easier for me to just in the downtime of the evening where me and Jen are, you know, hanging out in the living room together or, you know, doing whatever, you know, I can play games there. It's kind of hard to do with someone else in the room when you're playing it up on the big, you know, gigantic TV screen. Cause that, and you know, the sound kind of dominates a room. And, you know, if you're playing a game with a lot of gunfire or scary monsters in it, that's not the nicest sound palette to hang out in. So when it's on a device like a phone or a laptop where you can just plug in headphones, it makes it a lot easier to do a little gaming here and there.
You should get some Triton Turtle Beach surround sound headphones. Extreme. <Yeah. laughs> Take your Call of Duty KDR to the next level.
God. It's all about the KDR.
What just happened to you, Cole?
You played Cod Blops for 1 week, and now you got this complex.
No. I when I was working at GameStop, when I was working at the undisclosed retail video game location, I've said it a couple of times, but still, it's fun to play. that was one of the most baffling things. Those headphones, like people would come in and ask, like, "Hey, do you have the Turtle Beach 6450s? You mean for the Xbox? No, it's the 64. Those are the PlayStation, dummy." like that was so baffling to me. I didn't understand any of it, and yet it was so popular. It was the same thing as like the tweens who would come up and say, "Hey, do you have any of the Wizard 101 cards?" Wizard what? What are you saying? I don't know what you're saying to me.
Those are all words, true, but
like that, like putting them in that order doesn't make any sense. So I guess I only like do that voice when I'm talking. Like the headphones are a good idea, especially if you're in, you know, a space where you would want to be considerate of others. Like that's the use case for me. But they're marketed like Slim Jims, you know?
Yeah, they really are.
With explosions.
Wait, you mean with professional wrestlers?
Former professional wrestlers.
Sunday.
Show some goddamn respect. No.
Snap into some headsets.
snap into a tree. No. But
was that a reference to how he died?
You know, the universe. I'm stealing this joke from somebody else. The universe wanted him gone so badly they had to make sure. So they made him have a heart attack and get in a car crash. Like that is saying something.
That's the only way he would leave this world.
Most of us only get one cause of death. So God rest his overly tan soul. David, tell us what Brandon says.
So I have to regain my composure. Brandon says, "I usually get some gaming in while my girlfriend makes dinner. Don't worry, I'm not that guy. I do the dishes. And lately, I've been getting in bed an hour early so I can play some Persona 4. Yeah. I'll be honest, I have no idea what Persona 4 is. Is there a reason you have to play it in bed, or what?
It's a sex move.
It's kind of like what is it? Not Bakugan, whatever. Not Baiten Kaitos. That Metal Gear game that you had to play in the sun, or else you'd die.
What?
Oh, that was such a good game.
Yeah, it was.
Someone was like just screaming at their speakers.
Solar Boy, whatever. So
Solar Boy's Adventure in Moontown, yes. No, it was. Oh, God, now I need to look at it. No, but it was a good game, though. Yeah, it was a Game Boy Advance game. The cartridge had a light sensor. And you had to play it out in the sun. And the premise of the game, it was like a stealth action game. It was made by Hideo Kojima, but you use the sunlight power to fight vampires.
Whoa.
Nice.
But unfortunately, it was made for the one system where you can't see the screen in direct sun.
Backfire.
The irony. Boktai. It was a nonsense word. Don't worry. Yeah. But playing games in bed, dog. I'm playing through Final Fantasy Tactics for WoF, and I'm playing it on the iPad, and I've done most of that in bed. I wish that I could be the kind of person who could banish all screens from the bedroom. Like there exists a type of person who just like a TV in your bedroom. What? You know? Like yeah. I don't sleep in the same room as my cell phone. you know, but like for me, like my bedroom has as many screens as like more screens than any other room in my house or my apartment. But that says more about me than anybody else.
It's some people have trouble sleeping if they've, you know, been looking at a screen too recently. I've never had a problem with that. Like I can go straight from, you know, whatever game I'm playing or just reading news stuff on my phone or whatever it is straight into sleep, where I think some people just need that extra buffer.
There's a wonderful Mac app called Flux that actually changes the color temperature of your monitor along with the time of day. So like as you get into the nighttime, it doesn't put out like the high frequency artificial sun that it has to in the daytime. And like if you do like an A/B test on it, like in the middle of the night, you're like, whoa, what am I staring at? Like, what is my face 18 inches away from? You know?
Yeah, see, I'm the other way around. I generally go to sleep when the screen stops making sense. Like, am I the only one that does that? Like, if I'm trying to stay up, eventually I'll get to the point where I just lose the ability to read.
No, I've done that. I've been like, you know, I just got to the end of this paragraph and I don't remember a thing from that paragraph. So time for me to go to bed.
I noticed this when I got my Kindle. Like I would normally just like I'd read a book and just like it wouldn't be a problem if I fell asleep while I was reading it, because it would just gently rest on my chest or, you know, something like that. But with the Kindle, I would start to fall asleep and then I would promptly be hit in the face with an electronic device. It's even worse with the iPad because it's a gigantic piece of glass. It's like going to chip
Gorilla glass too. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Corningware.
basically, the moral of the story is I give Brandon a hard time for playing Persona 4 in bed, where we're all incredibly more dysfunctional.
Yeah. Good on you. Brandon. Oh, man.
I'll read Christopher Hare's.
Do it.
All right. Christopher Hare says, with a wife and a 5-month-old son, I don't have much time these days. Makes sense. I usually play late in the evening or early in the morning before work when everyone else is sleeping. My other main gaming time comes from mobile gaming while sitting on the can.
Oh, shame on you.
Yes. Yes.
An shame iPhone on you. And a DS go a long way towards keeping gaming alive for me. I totally read the wrong one. Not that I thank you for writing in, Chris. I thought he was the one who wrote about Hitman Absolution, so I was going to compliment him. But that's fair. Hard to game if you have a wife and a kid.
Yeah,
I can.
But that's no excuse. That's no excuse to take your device to the.
I was going
to
say he just reminded me of the other time I play games at work.
Oh fuck.
Oh. So I feel like with all the wife and kids things, the actual point of this question was for us to gauge how old the people who listen to this podcast are.
Right. Most shows just put out a survey. We
how married are our listeners?
Yeah. Don't play games on the toilet.
Why not?
Is there an allegory here?
Like,
or a fable?
Your phone is already the filthiest thing you own. Okay, and you spend most of your time, oh, I'm going to touch the screen, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm going to go snack. I'm going to reach over here and grab this. And you spend most of the time like, I'm going to hold this up to my face, right? And you're going to take that into a public restroom, no less, and sit down and tap-a-tap-a-tap-a, then put it in your pocket, risking dropping it on the floor.
Or worse.
To his defense, he does not specify whether it's a public or private restroom.
But Dennis said at work.
Oh,
and that upsets me. I'm taking a stand. You know,
What actually is Christopher is a prepper and he's canning in his basement.
Oh, okay. So he's like canning like radishes and turnips and stuff.
Yeah. That's totally what he meant. What are you talking about?
Various jams, jellies, and preserves.
Sits on his cans after he cans them.
This is awkward.
Well, that's how you create a seal. Yeah, you know.
That's right. Seal of approval. Yeah.
don't. Just be a normal person and have a Lysol wipe at home at the end of, you know, just a week. Let's say once every week and just wipe it down, dog. That's the takeaway. Wipe it down, for God's sake.
Cool. Are you a little OCD sometimes?
Nah. Have you been paying attention? Also, like, don't walk into a bathroom with your backpack and set it on the floor while you're doing your stuff.
Where is she going to put the backpack?
You're going to keep it on your back.
What? Well,
what if you're doing a number two, dude?
Well, you know, you have to make compromises.
Flip it around to the front.
Yep. So,
there's also hooks in the bathroom. Yes, how do you feel about hooks, Cole?
Well, if you have a laptop in there, I wouldn't want to trust my laptop, you know, bag to a hook.
You wouldn't trust it?
Well, you know, I've seen enough of those hooks broken off.
They're just a safety hazard right there.
Yeah. So anyway, Ben, where do you find time to game?
You know, when I'm not, you know, when I'm not working, I'm not doing anything right now. I'll go play a video game.
Yeah.
Video games are fun. That's pretty much how it goes down. If I'm not hungry or not working.
It's like The Sims. Are all your needs met? Yep. Let's game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Neat. Let's see here. Dennis, read Chad's.
Sure. Chad says, my wife and I have gaming time before or after dinner, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. If we aren't in RTS mode, which it would be Age of Empires 2, Warcraft 3, or SC2, we share the PS3. I only play Dark Souls, but she likes to play Hitman Absolution. Ben, your compliment now.
Yes.
Yeah, this was before – I read this before Cole mentioned that he was playing this as well. So I was just really happy that that game was brought up again.
Yeah. But, nice.
And, you know, I could see that being a fun game to watch somebody else play. I mean, it might just be because that was my first exposure to it. But it seemed like a really nice, you know, kind of communal experience. So
totally, yeah.
Rats off.
I was actually thinking about that. In our earlier digression on kind of sound and managing that, there are definitely certain games that have a kind of sound palette that is more tenable to having other people in the room. But there are also games that are more / less fun to watch other people play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like I could see a Hitman Absolution. Well, I know a Hitman Absolution is definitely a lot of fun to watch someone play.
I could imagine watching somebody play Dark. I can imagine watching somebody play Dark Souls would just be infuriating.
I think I basically infuriated because we know this
for the person who's playing it too.
Yeah,
I remember distinctly because you were over and I was playing it, and I had somehow gotten all the way to Anor Londo without knowing that there was a run button or that there was a roll or basically anything having to do with the circle button. I basically ignored it all game. And so Cole is just watching me trudge through the level. And he's like, so, you want to hit that circle button there? You want to, I could tell it's just eating you up inside. You didn't want to influence my playthrough, but at the same time, you knew you could make it so much better.
Cole follows the prime directive.
Oh man. Yeah, yeah. So, if you can find that fun game to play while somebody's watching, do it. Do that thing.
Yep.
David, you go, then I'll go, and then we'll get the last listener one from Dennis.
Sure. I'm unfortunately kind of in the Ben category where I just kind of tend to game anytime I'm not doing something else, which I'm actually in the process of trying to game less.
Yeah.
So I'm unfortunately the opposite of apparently all of our viewers who actually have productive lives.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's kind of like me. I'm kind of in that same camp. It's kind of like, okay, you know, you're always evaluating the context and your energy and things like that, and just saying like, do I want to play a game? Yes. Do I want to play a high intensity game or a low intensity game? Like, if I just want to put on, you know, a podcast and do something with my hands, I'll put in Dark Souls because I know it like the back of my hand. Mm-hmm. But like, if I want to get like a new experience, that's like finding time to play a movie or to like to watch a movie, right? Like that's hard. Right. That's hard for me to do because my attention span and energy are just so limited.
That's actually the reason I haven't dipped back into Journey in a serious way yet. Is like I know that when I want to do another playthrough of it, I want to have a solid 3-hour chunk of time blocked where I can get through the whole thing.
Yeah,
in one sitting.
I actually feel like that's a almost more relevant to me is how I game, in that, you know, I tend to big time PC because, you know, I work on my PC, I watch TV on my PC, so that tends to be why, like, I'm still playing Dark Souls despite having it for several years, is because, you know, when I just need to fill in some time, I'll boot up something on Steam, whereas Dark Souls, I need to, you know, walk to the, you know, walk over, turn on the TV.
All the way across the room.
Well, you know, switch over. I freaking hate switching over to, getting it to work on, like, coaxial cable, BE, or whatever.
I didn't know you could hook up a PS3 that way.
You can. Use those PS2 hookups, and they made RF adapters for PS2 that will work on PlayStation 3. Yeah.
Wow.
But man, I don't understand how somebody who works at their computer all day could get up and earn it, like, not get up and then just continue playing on it. It's really, really hard. If I'm gonna play a game, I need to be in a different context, you know.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Like, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting right, you know, like right now I'm sitting in the same chair where, you know, if I'm working from home, I, you know, am in this chair at this computer looking at this screen, oftentimes talking into this very microphone, you know, so like the idea of, you know, doing anything more than booting up and playing a game of Binding of Isaac, is just like, it's completely foreign to me. In terms of, like, I need to get away from this and go into a different room, even if it is sitting in a slightly more comfortable chair and playing a game on a slightly bigger screen, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, for me, just, like, gaming inertia or whatever is huge for me.
Yeah.
Especially for Dark Souls.
Wait, what is gaming inertia?
As in, like, you know, it's a thing where, like, getting started playing something is huge for me. If it's difficult at all to start doing it, I probably won't.
Gotcha.
It's a matter of friction. Yeah.
Right. So like Dark Souls, like, I tend not to make as much progress because I know if I'm going to play it, it takes, you know, some doing, some commitment. I can't just run around and hack things or end up dead.
Yeah. But I'm like 80% certain that I'm moving to be closer to work so I can have more time to play games. Like, so much of my time, so much of my life is wasted on my commute that it's like I get home and I have no energy or time or inclination to do anything besides, like, make dinner before I start to work on podcast stuff.
How long is the commute?
Like, on a regular day, about, like, 30, 40 minutes. On a bad day, an hour 10, something like that.
No way.
Yeah.
You add that up, that's, like, 8% of your life that you're spending in a car.
Yeah, I know. If I'd have known that. It's not like I'm sad about it.
Because the rush hour for Cincinnati is actually fairly bad.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where I'm moving to, you know, here in a couple months, I'm going to be 15 minutes both ways from work. I've timed the commute several times at different times of day, just to, you know, make sure of it. And yeah, so, like, that gives me time in the morning to play a game if I want to, or time in the evening. Yeah. So I would love to be the kind of person who would, like, wake up early on a day and play games before work. But
yeah, Chris mentioned that. That's a talent that I do not have.
Yeah, most of my life is, like, geared towards trying to figure out how to wake up as late as possible. So, yeah.
See, I'm the guy that gets up at 4 in the morning every day. But.
Dennis, you have one last response from a mystery listener.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned different intensity levels of gaming. And Anthony, or Tank, as he is also known, has some great points in that area. He says, I try to work an hour of games in per day to relieve stress and shut certain parts of my brain off. I'll also play different games for different moods. If I want a challenge, it's Fallout or Skyrim. I can't believe I still can't say that word right. So if I want a challenge, it's Fallout or Skyrim. If I'm pissed, then it's Gears 3. And if I just want to see pretty lights and listen to weird sounds, then it's Katamari Damacy.
Yeah.
I feel like Gears is the ultimate your pick. I mean, it's a game where you have a gun chainsaw.
I was going to say, chainsawing through someone is definitely a stress reliever. It's very cathartic.
But it's very true. Like, there are days where I'll come home and be like, you know, I can't deal with a high intensity game. I just need something stupid and fun. So I'll throw in something like an SSX, where even if you completely crash and bail, it's not that big of a deal.
What does SSX stand for?
It's like surf, snowboard, and motocross, and I guess they just never got around to making the bracketing games. So
it's kind of like they were talking about adding planes to Burnout for some reason.
they did add motorcycles to Burnout.
Yeah, but that makes sense because that's still something you drive on a street.
Indeed.
Yes. Don't you peel out in your airplane?
Oh, man. So that was the multiplayer. Thank you so much for participating, for finding the time, as it were. If you would like to...
Especially since they're all married, too.
I know. All of you,
I see what you did there.
All of you grown-ups. Yes. But if you would like to participate in that, watch the usual channels, the Facebook group, the Twitter feeds, and all of that. And we will be here to see them and read them. And I'm losing steam, so let's do the next segment.
The end boss.
So time for the end boss, where we just kind of wrap things up in a neat little package and just say what's the pervading mood. It is the Jerry Springer's final thoughts for the week. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first? Okay.
I have one.
Okay, go.
Sure. Gamification has kind of been on my mind recently, specifically in the form of working out. Like, I can't remember if I've mentioned it on the show, but I recently started doing CrossFit. And previous to this, I had always just hated working out, felt like I was going to the gym, wasting my time and not really getting anything for it, and just did not enjoy anything about the process. But with CrossFit, there's always like a time limit, or you're trying to get the maximum number of reps, or, you know, it's actually like a team competition kind of thing going on. So there's always some aspect where there is a very clear and immediate goal that you are advancing towards, beyond just get finished and get the hell out of here. So, that's for some reason flipped a little dopamine switch in my head that has made me enjoy working out in a way that I just wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah. All it takes is instituting a reward structure, right?
Yep.
Yeah. There's an iPhone/Facebook game called FitQuest.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, which I've seen people mention from time to time. But that is another thing. Yeah, gamification, it's that is definitely a buzzword. Mm-hmm. It is a thing people do in order to motivate people and shit.
And all that jazz.
Yeah. I'll do mine. So we've been trying to, bring in some more ways to support the network. And, for example, for the tribute system on Watch Out for Fireballs, we have the Abject Suffering show, which is really fun. But I'm trying to think of new ways to bring that stuff to other shows. Maybe not something as involved as that, but just like a little thing that we can give people for kicking us a couple of bucks. Right. So mm-hmm. If anybody has any kind of like level specific merch or, trinkets or gigaws or digital kind of stuff, let me know. And we can see about putting that in there. So I've just been thinking about that stuff a lot lately. So that is mine. Good.
I actually have a man in gigaws. So if we want to go that direction.
I've got a source on the inside that says gigaws are going to be hot. So, cool. Who else?
This is just completely trivial, but I keep thinking of it every time I see the show notes for our last show. Gravity Bone is quite possibly one of the greatest names ever.
That's great, right? I'm surprised nobody went and played that game, because everybody kind of seemed to be up on it. But
yeah. I played it.
You did?
Long ago.
Oh, yeah. not a great Gravity Bone. Yeah, I was talking about
the new one,
Dirty Flights 11. Yeah,
I haven't played that one.
No. Okay,
sorry.
Yeah.
So sorry.
And how about you, Ben? Final boss.
I was trying to scramble to think of one while you guys were saying yours, but I do not have one for the time being. I made a budget. We'll go with that.
Ooh.
So. Getting on that mint.com.
Is that a budget maker?
Yeah, it's neat. It's a neat service. Yeah, just like if you trust hooking your bank accounts up to it. I mean, it's run by the people who do like Quicken and QuickBooks, so they're relatively trustworthy. Like you can download an app that gives you like spending alerts, and you can actually set up individual budgets. So like when I first moved out on my own, and you know I had expenses and stuff, that was one of the first things that I did to kind of keep my income and expenditures under control. So I'd recommend that as well. Yeah,
we actually use it. So it's as in-depth or as simple as you want it to be.
Yeah. Like you can set like goals and stuff and like, you know, like I want to save for retirement and do this kind of thing. That's a little bit too fidgety for me because I don't plan to live past 30. But no, it's definitely.
Sounds like the whiskey's winning out now.
Wait, so that's why you're teaching Dennis to edit?
My empire must live on. No,
he will survive.
Yeah, but it's being responsible is neat.
That's a good way to end the podcast.
Yes. Don't be a fool.
Stay
buy a spool. I don't know, but make sure it's in your budget. I don't even know. We're done.
It's over.
Kill it. Kill it. Kill it.
That was episode number 12 of The Level, podcast for people who love video games. A couple of things to mention here. Of course, all the usual stuff. iTunes, ratings, reviews. We've got a couple more of them. Thank you so much for everybody doing it. Throw on if you're of the iTunes persuasion. I know iTunes is literally Hitler to some people, but maybe you can throw literally. Us a bone. What's that?
It's literally.
Yeah, well, not even figuratively. It's literally.
It's literally Hitler. Same thing with Facebook. You know, some people don't like Facebook. I can understand. But if you do like Facebook, you can join the discussion at facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Become our fan. You can like us, all that kind of stuff. Share us with people. And that's one way to find the multiplayer prompts. In terms of more tangible stuff, if you would like to support the network monetarily, you can go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar, where you can buy stuff from Amazon, and we get a little cut from that, and that helps support the show hosting and things like that. There are a couple of other options there. We're going to bring in the tribute system for we're going to roll that out across all shows because it's a good thing. And you know, by no means should you feel obligated to give us money. That is not something we want to say like, hey, please do it. But it is nice when this doesn't cost us stuff to do. So consider it. It's a thing there. And then in general, other shows on the network, The Pitch is a program that is done by my friend Gary and his friend Brayton. He's a cool guy. I talked to him a little while ago. That is another show on the network that is, you know, fans of The Level might enjoy. It's nice.
It's pretty funny.
It's all right. Yeah, it's okay.
I listened to the entire series this last week, and I would say it's worth listening to. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I was going to say, I listened to the entire series, and man, was it awful. No, they've got some. I'm lucky enough to be able to listen to this stuff before it comes out, because you know, they record like wicked far in advance. Oh, man, it's so good. Nice. Yeah. Other stuff, video game related things. Watch out for Fireballs, Bonfireside Chat. For non-video game stuff, Those Damn Ross Kids, a show that I do with my brother. Cross promotion, we don't do it enough, but this is a whole big wide world, a whole big wide network that we do. Am I missing anything, fellas?
A bunch of ducks to feed.
Yeah, so many ducks. So many hungry, quacking mouths.
I'm getting Tokyo jungle flashbacks.
I know, right? I was about to tie it back in. I was going to ask you, like, how many ducks do you feed in Tokyo jungle? So let's do the Twitter and the sign-off. As I said, my name's Cole Ross. I'm your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Cole Ross, KOLEROSS. Additionally, I do some tweets on DuckFeed TV. That's just at DuckFeed TV. Dennis.
I am at DFuria on Twitter. And as Cole said, I am Dennis Furia.
Yes.
I'm David Moneysmith, and I'm at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
Yep.
I'm Ben Merkel, and I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Cool. So thank you so much for listening, and budget, I guess? I don't even know.
Budget.
Wives and budgets and real life.
And responsibility.
Get back to real life. You've wasted enough time on this show.
Yeah.
frittering your time away on such trivial pursuits. You should be.
Oh, that's a good game.
Playing Trivial Pursuit with friends.
Yeah.
drinking scotch and sleepy time tea, so.
Oh man, I'm gonna lose you halfway
to see which one wins out.
One makes me angry, one makes me placid.
No matter who wins, we lose.
You have to balance the humors.
See, that I feel like you just end up just incredibly angry but relaxed.
Yeah. Well, a tranquil fury. Yes. Yeah. You know, that's basically how I exist most days.